Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Holistic Matters podcast. This is the Holistic Approach to Pet Care, and I'm here with certified veterinary technician Jody Griffiths.
Hello to all of our veterinary professionals and pet parents. Today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Sue Howell and how she works with Whole Foods in her veterinary practice, Thrive Holistic Veterinary Care in Wisconsin. Let's jump right in. Welcome, everybody. We're excited to have another episode of our podcast. Today, we are going to welcome Dr. Sue Howell. Dr. Sue is an integrative veterinarian. And before we jump into it, today, we're going to be talking about Whole Foods in the veterinary practice. And Dr. Sue is going to be sharing her experience. So, Sue, why don't you go ahead and give us a little brief introduction of yourself before we jump into it?
Sure, that sounds good. My experience with Whole Foods, and meaning real foods fed to pets in practice, has kind of evolved over time. And it's been a really interesting journey for me. I graduated from university just feeding processed food to pets because that's what I was taught. And over time, I realized what was in the ingredients that I was feeding. And that was like, ooh, interesting. And I realized, well, maybe I need to think about this a little bit more. So over the years, I've learned more about the benefits of whole foods and started branching out into some other areas, food therapy, veterinary acupuncture. And I started my own practice about 4 years ago, just focusing strictly on nutrition and whole foods to bring pets to a better place in their lives, because of my experience seeing how food has changed the lives of the pets I've worked with. So my practice is called Thrive Holistic Veterinary Care, and I'm located just outside Milwaukee. We've got a cute little place on the river, and we see one pet at a time here. So it's very intimate, and we have some good conversations about nutrition.
That's awesome. And so let's start out by thinking about, and we've mentioned whole foods already a couple of times, just even within the first couple of minutes of this, thinking about what is the difference between whole foods versus processed foods? I mean, what really is the advantage of feeding our animals whole foods versus the very well-known and have been fed for many years processed foods?
Wow, there are so many benefits. And we're starting to see more and more research now in pets in particular, and how their bodies respond to real food versus ultra-processed food. Pets have been fed ultra-processed food in like a dry food form for a really long time, and goes back into, I believe, the 50s when they started using an extruder process on the food to make it uniform in shape. And so it would also have a shelf life. And it's one of those things where it's a convenience factor too. I grew up feeding my pets dry food. You know, we learned all about the benefits of just feeding something out of a bag, like I mentioned, at the university. And the difference is that you're taking food that was real at one point and grown on a farm or raised an animal that's raised, and you're taking it and you're subjecting it to not only high heat processing multiple times, which changes the structure of proteins, changes the enzymes that are natural to food, it can denature them because of the heat, it creates toxic byproducts potentially, and we do see this now in research with advanced glycation end products. When you take a protein and you melt it together with a carbohydrate or a sugar, it twists that protein so it doesn't fit into receptor sites properly in the body, and it can actually gum up receptors and advance aging by creating these, what they call advanced glycation end products. So, you know, that's one of the problems. The other problem is just moisture factor. When you have dry processed food, you've sucked all the moisture out of it, and moisture is really important to the body, to digestion and to the incorporation of nutrients from the stomach into the bloodstream, or from the intestinal tract into the bloodstream. So we're sort of losing that as well. And we're seeing a lot of pets that are suffering because they don't have enough moisture in their food. In nature, they would get it from eating prey. And there's always moisture in the food they eat, except for when we feed them. We're feeding them about 15% moisture, and they should be getting about 80+% to be healthy. So that's another problem. So there's multiple problems when you're feeding processed foods. It just changes how that animal is incorporating nutrients into their body versus eating like real fresh food. A carrot is going to have so many more nutrients in it than just taking an isolate from a carrot and saying, well, ascorbic acid is going to be, you know, your vitamin C. Well, you know, you get vitamin C from a carrot, but it also has all these other factors that are synergistic and have a real explosive effect on all of the cells in the body to enhance wellness and performance. So those are just several things that can be different between processed food and fresh food. Animals also really aren't super interested in processed food. If you've noticed, feeding your dog dry food, sometimes they'll turn their nose up or they'll call them picky eaters. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, you've seen that, right, with your own dog. So picky eaters generally know that like that food's not super tasty. And even though the pet food companies spray, once the food's been cooked, the dry foods overspray it with things that make it taste better and that put vitamins and minerals back into the food because they've been lost in processing. You know, it's just, it's not the same thing as getting that aroma and that taste and that, you know, sensation of eating real things. And so you start putting a little like egg on the food and the dog gets real interested because they're like, wow, that's like, that's tasty. And they tend to know exactly what they need. So their body needs it, they're going to want to eat it.
Which is such an interesting thing that if there's something that their body needs or is lacking, that they tend to be drawn to that. And so I could certainly see how feeding a diet that is a little bit more fresh or just more fresh in general is going to be way more enticing to an animal than that than the diets that are so heavily processed and not providing everything that their body requires. I mean, that makes a lot of sense as to why they wouldn't be attracted to that. How does farming play a role in this? Like the sustainability of it, organic versus non-organic?
Yeah, that is also a super important point to when you're eating fresh food, how is it grown, right? A lot of the sourcing we have these days, the soil's not healthy because it's been over-farmed, it's been nuked with chemicals. And so the soil, it doesn't have all the great bacteria and minerals and fungi and all that good organic matter in it that gives nutrition to the plants and then to the animals that eat the plants, right? So healthy soil is going to be the foundation for getting all of the microbes and minerals and vitamins into the plants. So organic farming is actually going to promote that. It produces higher yield and more nutrient-dense crops. We also get to avoid the pitfalls of chemical treatment. You know, Roundup especially can have an effect on health of the microbiome. It can get your gut all out of sorts, and you know, that is inherent in a lot of the crops that are used in pet food these days. So avoiding that and using organic foods. Organic means no pesticide treatment. So that's another big benefit to organic farming.
There are so many opinions out there on what the appropriate diet is. And I have come to the conclusion that I could ask three people the exact same question on what food they would recommend. I could ask three veterinarians what foods they would recommend for one of their patients. And I'm pretty sure that I would get a different answer from each of them. From one end of the spectrum where they're recommending the dry kibble, prescription type diets, all the way to the other end of the spectrum where it might be either home prepared or raw type diets. Diets are not one size fits all, for sure. And so how do you determine when you're working with your patients, what is the diet that you're going to recommend?
So when I look at a pet, I look at them from several different perspectives. I'm trying to look at the whole body and not just the dog as a sum of its parts. So I want to be able to look at the individual pet and say, you know, what's your lifestyle? How old are you? What are your body imbalances that I can observe just from my exam? And my exam is a little different than other veterinarians who are doing conventional medicine. I look at tongue and pulse, which is a more Chinese medicine evaluation. So I'm looking for dogs, and like if they have excessive heat in their body, they're panting, they're itchy, you know, they've got a lot of cool seeking behaviors, you know, I'm probably going to be feeding them something, making sure that I can balance out that heat with feeding them cooler things to help, you know, bring that body back to balance again too. So my food choices in that situation are definitely to get them off of processed food, because that's, again, dry and super high heat process. So heat is going to add to the heat in the body and get more moisture into the food, because moisture is going to be cooling. I'm going to probably move them more towards fresh home cooked diet and potentially freeze dried raw or raw diet, depending on their ability to digest and things like that. So that's how I choose. I mean, if they had on the opposite end of the spectrum, a really old arthritic dog that gets really cold easily and its ears are cold and its tongue is pale and it's got really weak pulses, I probably want to warm that dog up because it's probably seeking warmth. So I still would steer away from those processed dry diets, because they're still going to suck moisture from this dog. I want to give them more warming proteins like chicken or lamb or venison in a fresh food form. And I'm going to make sure that the food is cooked instead of raw, because raw is going to be cold and cooked is going to be warming and nourishing. So I'll pick foods along that line that are going to kind of nourish the body in that way.
I find that so extremely interesting, because there are some that have a very strong opinion that all animals should be eating raw diet. But when you look at it from a Chinese perspective, it does make total sense that if that body is already out of balance and they're seeking warm, then we don't want to feed them something even more cooling that's going to help to take it out of balance even more. And so I love how you approach your patients, because you do take each one so individually and evaluate what their needs are and then cater what your recommendations are to those needs, which I think is very beneficial. When it comes to, I mean, all families and all pet owners have different dynamics in their home. I mean, you mentioned home cooking. How do you handle pet parents that are on a budget, or maybe they don't have time, they feel overwhelmed by a recommendation to do a more fresh diet or something beyond just opening a bag of dry food and scooping it into a bowl? How do you handle those kind of hurdles, I guess you could say?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's like a real question, right? I mean, there are a lot of people, including myself, when I was starting to do this, that it's like time, money, just making a change to something you're not used to doing. Yeah, one of my biggest considerations is what can that family do? You know, so even getting a little bit of fresh food into the diet can be significant for a pet. So if you are feeding a dry food diet, I try to look at the ingredients in the diet and make sure that we kind of move towards an ingredient list that's a little more healthy for that pet. Then having them just put a tiny bit of something fresh on the food, like I mentioned, an egg, right? Or something they're eating in their diet that's easy that they can make a little extra of and they can put on the dog's food. And even getting, you know, a little bit of bone broth onto the food is significant to moisten it and to give more nourishment. And people get excited about it. I mean, if you can do little bits at a time, you start feeling confident and you see changes and you're like, wow, I'm going to do a little more of that. So it is a learning process, but it can be really beneficial. And variety is something I talk about like a lot with people, because it's one of the most important things. And so the more variety they can get in that pet's life, the better their cells are going to perform and the less problems they're going to have with their health, and the more healing that their body is going to be able to do. So it's so hard when someone comes in and says, what do you feed a diabetic dog? Well, okay, who's the dog? Because, you know, it's not always the same thing. It's going to be similar, but it's not going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Do you find problems with owners being compliant with recommendations do you find where you send home a suggestion for maybe some little diet tweaks or maybe some other things to help improve the health of their pet, and then they come back next time and they have excuses? And I mean, how do you handle situations like that?
Yeah, I just try to be gracious, I guess. I mean, I think about myself and how hard it was, you know, to do multiple things at once when I was making changes to my own pet's food. And I understand they're busy, and I keep good notes, and I make sure I've written the things down that I want them to do, so they went home with my recommendations. But I'll go back and say, look, were you able to add this one thing? And they're like, oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I got to think about that. It's like, you know, that's okay. We're just going to revisit it. And, you know, just try to nurture them along in the process. And if I tell them, look, you know, your dog's still got these really bounding pulses and a really red tongue, and if we could put some of that leafy green, if you just put a little bit more, you just get that broccoli on there, we might be able to change that. And, you know, that's going to be cool. So I give them a reason as to why they're doing it. And it's a lot of education, so hand-holding. Mm-hmm. But it has benefit in the end. Yeah, for sure.
Are you recommending the addition of supplements when you're working with changing diets as well?
Yeah, quite often I do, for sure. Because I'm working with a dog whose digestion's not quite right because they've got some symptoms or health problems. And most of the issues with chronic inflammation come back to the gut and how, you know, the food's being absorbed or not absorbed, as the case may be, or changes to the biome. And so, yeah, I mean, changing foods needs to be done slowly. Dogs aren't used to variety. And a lot of times supplements can help them make that transition in a way that's more successful because they'll be able to digest their food more completely as they're making the transition. I do, and I use supplementation for other reasons as well to help support different organ systems when I know that there's an imbalance there as well.
And there's so many supplements out there, whether they be ones that are only available from the veterinarian, ones that are available retail. How do you help to guide your pet owners to choose a quality supplement? What do you have them look for? Or maybe you're the one that's providing that guidance. So then what do you look for in a quality supplement?
So number one in the supplement, what I'm looking for is that it contains whole foods. Because of the impact of food on the cells. If I give like a vitamin supplement that's just like vitamin E or vitamin C, and it's been synthetic, I have the potential to overdose them. I know that vitamin isn't from nature. It's been made in a chemist's lab. So the body's not going to incorporate it the same way as it would with real food. And, you know, a small amount of vitamin in a whole food form is going to be much more uptaken and utilized by the body than one that's, you know, been isolated away from its food. So I look for whole foods. And whole plant, milk thistle versus an extract from milk thistle, or something that's got kiwi in it instead of ascorbic acid. So there's just that ingredient list is going to be important to me. If it's all chemical, I don't even touch it. The other thing I look for is quality and sourcing. So I want to make sure that the company who produces that supplement is a reputable company, that they have some oversight, right? Good manufacturing processes, making sure that what is on the label is actually what's in the supplement, so that there's no contaminants or any question that the ingredients are what they are. Also want to make sure that the supplement has benefit to the pet. And I can determine that by, you know, using certain supplements over time. I know which ones have been successful in my practice, and so I tend to recommend them.
Are you still using pharmaceuticals in your patients, or are you primarily nutrition focused and maybe rounding that out with diet changes, the addition of some supplements, or do you still recommend medications when you feel that it's necessary?
I do recommend medications when necessary. I don't necessarily decide on the medications here, but I support the decisions of pet parents' primary veterinarian. A lot of times medications are needed because they're going to put out fires. And dogs or cats that are really in a bad place, a lot of times they do need to be supported by medication in order to get them out of a real horrible situation. But I also try to do the food at the same time so that the body has a way to rebuild and repair, and it can bring that pet along a lot more gently and more effectively with less medication in my world if they're doing food therapy along with their medication.
Do you have any cases off the top of your head that came to you very frustrated or perhaps not getting the results that they wanted from more conventional means? Do you have a success story that you could share?
That's a loaded question because I have a ton of them. it's outstanding how impactful this whole nutritional thing is on a pet's life. And I have more stories about that than I do about like absolute failures. Like that doesn't happen very often around here. We generally see improvements in almost every pet that we see when they start, you know, getting foods that are appropriate for them in their whole food form. So yeah, I mean, like, for example, I'll tell you today I do phone consultation too. And so I was following up with a pet parent who has puppy, young dog. And this dog has had digestive problems ever since it was little, and vomiting, diarrhea, doesn't want to eat its food. They've been through multiple prescription diets and they can't figure it out. And she was frustrated. So she, you know, found me and called. And what we did was take the dog slowly off of her dry food diet and had her start, you know, just doing a trial at home of cooking a 3-ingredient food. And lo and behold, the dog has got more energy. She's happier. She's playful. She isn't having problems with her digestion like she was. I mean, it's a process, so she still has a little bit of digestive upset occasionally, but it's not to the degree that it was. And the client's just thrilled. She's like, I can't even believe it. The dog loves her food. That's the other thing. She said, I can't believe it. This dog would not eat. And now she's like so hungry. So, you know, she gets excited when the food's out because she's like, I can eat this. This is really good. She's getting more variety now. We're adding some more things. And she's, you know, buying a diet that's prepared in a chef's kitchen to be complete and balanced by a boarded nutritionist. And so she's going to be able to do that so she can just open it and serve it to make it easier on her life. But the whole fresh food thing has been the bomb for this puppy who's now feeling awesome and like a puppy should. Mm-hmm. And that was in about 8 weeks' time.
That's amazing. And it's got to be so satisfying and gratifying for you as a veterinarian to be able to offer the guidance and the help and to just see the appreciation not only on the pet owner's face, but then also just seeing these animals that are just so much more happy and energetic. And you had told me once, and actually I've heard you say this multiple times, and so I think it would be a good way to wrap this up, is to just share how really focusing on nutrition in your practice has renewed your love for veterinary medicine.
Yeah, I mean, it really has. I was in a real tough spot in practice probably 10 years ago or so. And it was because I wasn't feeling like I was making a difference in these pets' lives. The tools I had weren't working to bring pets to the health I wanted to see. So, you know, drugs and surgery weren't doing it all. And boy, having the ability to talk about food and to be able to get these pets just a little something fresh has made my life better. I am not suffering from as much compassion fatigue or burnout. It's fun to come to work, and I love seeing these animals and their pet parents thrive. And yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think it's one of the most important things anyone can do for their pet, because pets eat every day. So what's the most impactful thing we can do for them but feed them in a way that keeps their bodies balanced? And that's a fresh food feeding situation. No matter how little or much you can do with it, it's going to be significant. I love veterinary medicine because of the integrative approach. And I think that definitely is something I wish I'd done ever since I graduated. But there's a ton of new veterinarians coming out learning these things right off the bat, and that's cool. So I'm all about helping anyone who wants to know about what I'm doing to do more with their pet or in their practice.
So to all of you veterinarians that are maybe listening in today, if you're kind of feeling like you're in a spot where Dr. Sue was, there definitely are other options out there for you. I mean, there are things that you can learn about, other avenues that you can take in order to really be supporting your patient's health. And so if you're looking for more information, Dr. Sue, I'm sure would be happy to help guide. Like she said, she works for, or she owns Thrive Holistic Veterinary Care here in Wisconsin. And so if there's any direction that would be helpful for you, I guarantee that Dr. Sue would be happy to help with guiding that. So with that, I want to thank everybody for being here today, for listening in. Such great information. Thank you so much to you, Dr. Howell, for taking the time to talk to us today. Truly an inspiration. And I know that the number of lives that you are impacting, not only for pet parents, but also for the animals, is truly incredible. So I really appreciate you being here with us today.
Thank you, Joni, and thank you for inviting me.
For more education focused on holistic veterinary care, visit holisticmatters.com for articles grounded in the expertise of veterinary professionals. That's holistic with a W.